And welcome to Bronze and Modern Gods. I am John. That's Richard.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm good. I just want to remind everybody.
You got it right this week.
I got it right this week. I was
going to sail by. I was not going to
draw attention to it, but okay. If you want to give me some kudos, that's fine. And if you are not following us on Facebook and Instagram, you're missing out because we post a lot of content during the week when you're not following us on YouTube. So, Bronze and Modern Gods on both Facebook and Instagram. Do it today, won't you? Thank you. Also, if you're watching us on YouTube, and why aren't you? Because we're gorgeous. You can leave us a like and subscribe. Slam that subscribe button. Hit that mash Hulk. Punch that like button, whatever. And leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform.
You guys are for a treat this week, I tell you.
The biggest iced coffee. I am on fire today. And I want to start with something new. First of all, we're going to have our hot book of the week. It's kind of obvious, no spoilers, but when you hear it, you're going to go, oh, of course, that's the hot book of the week. We're going to do a follow-up to our grading comics episode where we showed you step-by-step how to accurately grade your comic and predict what grade the slabbing company you're sending it to is going to give you. We have the results from that episode today. And of course, we've got the 25-year rule with a really cool Punisher book. We've got our underrated books of the week with another Punisher book. But we're going to start off with a new segment. I love new segments. Viewer mail.
You've got mail.
Why don't you start off with our first viewer comment?
Yes. This is from this guy, Dan. He says, came across your show and have been loving it. Since it's October, it'd be great to hear some classic horror comics, which could be anything like Swamp Thing, Venus, Strange Tales, and so on. I'd love to pick up a few for the collection, but have no idea where to begin. Love the show. Keep up the great work. Thanks, this guy, Dan. Appreciate the praise.
Thank you. That's a fantastic idea, especially for Halloween. So why don't we take it one step further, Richard? What do you think about doing a live Halloween week episode, the Monday of Halloween week, and we will talk about horror supernatural comics, and we'll be live on Monday night. How's that?
That sounds fun. It sounds like fun. Talk about pre-code horror and modern horror. It'd be a good time.
And I promise I'll look up to see what day Halloween is so I don't have to say Halloween week. Because for all I know, Halloween's on a Monday, so it'll be perfect. We'll find out, but we'll keep you posted on Facebook and Instagram, Bronze and Modern Gods. I have a comment here, too, by MK Hobbies, who says they just subbed. Thank you. Thank you. Nice video. Thank you. Would love to see more cleaning videos. Okay. And any luck with foxing? All right. Ooh. That's a good one. Yeah. I am scared to death to F with foxing because that involves peroxide solution. It involves very carefully using a Q-tip, just the right amount, because if you go too far with that peroxide, you've screwed up the book. So
You get conservation grade or even a restoration grade too if you dabble too much into it. So it's a tough subject.
It's really tough. So no, the answer is no, I have not gone into the foxing area, but we are going to do another episode about pressing and cleaning with a focus on modern comics. That's coming up when you get to see me hopefully teach Richard how to do it because he's terrified.
I am terrified. I've got a whole stack of books here that I'm just too terrified to touch.
I'm telling you, it's a breeze. Compared to silver and bronze, modern books are a breeze to press. We'll get that. Thank you, everyone, for commenting. Please leave us more comments. We will answer questions here in this new segment, Viewer Mail. All right, we're going to move on to our hot book of the week. Richard, this is one that's near and dear to you. You have it. I don't. It's not something in my wheelhouse, but I'm going to let you take this one since it's all you.
Actually, I sold mine about I sold it about a month ago.
Oh,
we're talking about Batman Adventures number 12. This is the first appearance of Harlequin. It is anyone who collects comics is aware of this book. It is definitely a hot copper/modern book. I always have difficulties with that delineation between copper and
modern. This one's straddling the line. Yeah.
Yeah. Last week there was a newsstand 9.8 CGC version of this book that sold for a record-breaking $4,617.89. I love the 89 cents at the end there. That's just.
Well, I put that in the show notes for a very specific reason. I put the specific price because we've talked about this in our eBay episode, the power of odd bidding.
Yeah.
To win an auction. And this is a great example of someone putting in a very specific odd bid and they won the auction. That's where that weird number comes from.
It's amazing that you saw a newsstand. I sold my book about a month and a half ago for a 9.8. It was not a newsstand. It was just a direct copy for about $1,900. And that at the time, that was pretty much the going rate. So in this short window of time, we've seen even more increase in this book. Now, that was direct and not a newsstand. And newsstand books have a special premium associated with their value. So,
and that seems to be growing. Well, we have a few more examples we'll be going over in the next few weeks. But newsstands are really kind of taken off. I'm looking with one jaundiced eye, but okay.
Newsstands are tough because there is no difference between the books other than that barcode. The thought is that since that book sat on a shelf in some drugstore or comic book store and was manhandled by a variety of different patrons, the number of books that are of high grade are limited compared to the number of high grade books that showed up in the direct market. So people associate that newsstand with a higher value. But yeah, you also have to remember, while later on in the decade of the 2000s, newsstands started to taper off. Back in the 80s, you know, newsstands were of greater quantity than they mm-hmm. were later in the run. So you may have, at some point, you had this weird dichotomy where there were actually more newsstands than they were direct books. And over time, that shifted as the industry went towards direct. So you got to be careful. Not every single newsstand should have a premium associated with it.
Yeah, I get the Batman Adventures 12 from 1994, the newsstand version having a premium. I do not get the weird sale that just happened this week with the Ghost Rider number one newsstand version selling for over $1,000. Barnes & Noble, Borders, Walden's were still a thing. There were plenty of newsstand books out there, but that book sold for $1,000, above $1,000 for a newsstand version. Something's going on. Either there's someone that just doesn't know enough and paid that much, or there's, you know, I don't want to say something fishy's going on, but I smell something.
It's trends, you know. People are driven by trends, and unfortunately, right now, newsstands are the big trend. And
yeah,
this is from a guy who has a number of valuable newsstands. So invest in the book, not necessarily whether it's a direct or newsstand, because in 2 years, this focus on newsstand could disappear. And if you bought a book with an inflated value because it was newsstand,
right,
you run the risk of losing part of that investment. Just be careful.
Well, to go back to your sale from a few weeks ago, you said you got how much for your 9.8?
$1,900
for your direct version. The direct version of this book just sold this week for $2,499.99. I want to give a shout out to the seller for the 1 cent discount for $3,500.
Was it free shipping?
I should be. Do you have a rule? I have a rule. If I'm selling a book more than $500, I'm right, paying the shipping.
It was a joke. Yeah, you better pay. You better throw in shipping if you're dropping four figures.
I can't remember what book it was. I saw an auction end, and it was like thousands and thousands of dollars, and the shipping was like $25. I'm like, really? Can you like chip in a little bit, buddy? Come on. The 90-day GPA average on those 9.8s has been $2,079. So this book is obviously on the move. And why is it so hard in 9.8, Richard?
No, that's a good question. And the cover of this book is subject to damage along the spine. And I also think the main reason, though, is that this was a child's book. This was not marketed towards comic book collectors. This is marketed towards people who watch the cartoon show. And therefore, there are less people who are squirreling this book away in a long box than maybe other books of that era. So yeah, in that case, 9.8s are more rare. It's not a rare book, really, in general. It's just like Amazing Spider-Man 300, it's those high grades, those 9.8s that are the rarest of the collection.
And we see it kind of happening now with some people specking on books like Marvel Action Avengers with the first Yellow Hulk. You know, you just never know if Yellow Hulk is ever going to be a thing 10, 15 years from now. And that Marvel Action, which was a book made for kids and very lightly ordered by direct retailers, is going to be a thing. You know, it was for like a brief second there when we first started this show. Do you remember that Marvel?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But you know what? I have a problem with chasing the flavor of the day. You know, you get these characters of the day like Yellow Hulk, who may have a spotlight briefly, but there really is difficulty to see that spotlight turning into some kind of solid commitment from Marvel from some movie property in the next 5-6 years. So do you really want to invest on this book and maybe spend $25 and hold on to it with the prospect maybe in 2 or 3 years to make $50? I mean, or would you rather take that $25 and invest it in something that's going to have a greater chance of a return on your investment? Because these off characters, and I invest in these too. There are certain ones that I buy. Last week we talked about Miao Morales in Spider-Gwen. Yes. I have no idea what that's going to be. I thought it was good. But in general, I just don't chase the flavor of the day, the things that other people are chasing today, because the odds on some of these coming up as, you know, golden are pretty slim.
I don't mind paying cover price for something and specking on like a Yellow Hulk. If I found a Marvel Action 11 or 12 or 10 or whatever number it is, first Yellow Hulk for $3.99, I'd buy it and put it up somewhere. But is something like, just conceptually, is the Yellow Hulk ever going to be a thing? Because he seems very cowardly. The man's yellow.
Yeah. It's, you know,
your dad joke right here.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, be careful. I mean, investment is tricky. Comic books as an investment vehicle are tricky. You have two ways of going. And actually, one of the things I wanted to talk about was comparing some of these different methods. You got going for long-term growth, where you invest in more blue chip kind of books like Hulk 181, Amazing Spider-Man 300, things like that, Fantastic Four, really, Fantastic Four. Or do you go for a more dynamic short-term approach where you're buying a lot of these modern books that are just coming out and you're flipping them as quickly as you can, right, generating profit through that? Both ways are legitimate, but I really think if you're going to pick something that you're comfortable with doing full time. You know, dabbling in both can be dangerous. I've wasted a lot of money trying it. So it's one thing that you want to be careful about.
And I wonder how much fatigue is happening now, because when COVID hit, I was like, let's do this. And I was buying multiples and multiples of every Thor printing and every Venom printing. Those are my two examples we talked about last week. I don't want to repeat myself, but I find myself going more to what I know and what I love, which is bronze, which is copper, which is even silver. And we'll see what the market does, because...
Well, I think the market's already spoken. I mean, last week we talked about Amazing Spider-Man 300. This week we're talking about Batman Adventures number 12. We've talked about Hulk 181. We've talked about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 1. The market is still interested in these, you know, brand new modern books, but these keys, these bronze keys, these copper keys are generating huge amounts of revenue, huge amounts of gains in their value. So the market is turning back towards those safe investments. And there's always going to be money in those books.
And that's where I'm going. And I love a good variant. Don't get me wrong. I love a good variant. Art Adams, I'm there. But I'm looking for variants from a long time ago. I'm looking like for Whitman variants. I'm looking for price variations. You know, like there was a bunch of Archies that were 15-cent variants back in the day, 30 and 35-cent variants. We definitely have to do a show about the Marvel 35-cent variants sometime. Mm-hmm. But one of those books that I love, that was a variant book that's more bronze, we covered a few episodes ago in our show about grading comic books. And let me show you a clip from that show real quick, where we went through step by step how we grade and how to disassociate the emotion of you love this book but you've got to be objective when grading. And I graded a Marvel Spotlight Volume 2, Number 1, which is a price variant. I'll show you that. And here is the clip where I graded along with my prediction. Let's take a look.
All right, let me walk you through this. So I'm taking a look at the spine. It looks good. There's no spine stress. There's no white marks. There's no ticks. The corners are nice, as you can see there. I'm holding it up to the light, and you can see, I don't know if you can really see it on the camera, but there's a slight indentation around here that can press out. Pretty much, it looks good. If I hold it flat, see how it's flaring a little bit? I'm not sure if that is from being stacked incorrectly within a box, probably is, or bad pressing. I don't think it's bad pressing because, like I said, I have that indentation there, but I can fix that as well with a little bit of humidity. Now, here is where it gets interesting. Remember when I said to check the back cover? Here's why. If you look at the back cover, all of a sudden I've got divots here. I've got a water stain here. I don't know if you can even see that on the camera. I might get a close-up and insert it in here, though, but there's a water stain there. And then there's a little bit of wrinkling down here at the bottom. This is not a 9.6, 9.8, or 9.4. I would say this is a 9.0 at the most with a water stain.
And here is the end result. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. The prediction was 9.0 max, right? Wow. 9.0 white pages. Even better are the grader's notes. The grader's notes say small tear, top right of back cover, and small stain, left center of back cover, which is exactly what I pointed out in that video. So I'm not saying John's the best grader ever. Look, he got it spot on. But I did. But what I'm saying is that sometimes by the way, this is why I love this book. It was printed without an issue number. There was a small portion of the print run where that black plate fell off. And so that's why I love this book. And I loved Captain Marvel. And I had a soft spot for Captain Marvel. I had a soft spot for the tryout books. I loved Marvel Premiere. I love Marvel Spotlight. I like the idea of getting a different character every other month that, you know, that can't hold his own book for nothing. Go back. I'm going to put a link in the description to that grading comics video. If you really want to just be honest with yourself, this is a step-by-step way of doing that. So there we go. I've got that now, and you'll see it for sale soon. No, I'm just kidding. For my collection.
So you like Marvel Spotlight and Marvel Premiere?
I do.
You do? Do you remember a series from back in the day called What If?
What If? I do.
What If was one of my favorite books back in the day. It was amazing when you talk about having different characters in different situations. That was something I really enjoyed. And as a matter of fact, my underrated book of the week happens to be a What If title.
Ooh, so we'll talk about that in a second. But our next segment is about another alternate universe, another What If. It happened 25 years ago, so that leads us to the 25-year rule. Our 25-year rule this week is going back to, guess what, 1995, 25 years ago. What If is still chugging along. Punisher's on its last legs. There's this new writer, Garth Ennis, that's making some noise here and there. He just came off a run on Hellstorm. And now he writes this crazy book called The Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe. Take that, Marvel Universe. Yes, The Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe was a one-shot in 1995 where Frank Castle's family is killed during a fight between the Avengers, the X-Men, the Brood, a whole bunch of people. And instead of going after crime bosses and mob lords, he now devotes his life to killing every single superhero and supervillain in the Marvel Universe.
Wow.
This is a crazy, crazy book. It was definitely done very tongue-in-cheek, but it's extremely violent. I will not spoil the story for you, but I will say it comes down to, like every battle with the Punisher, between the Punisher and Daredevil. Don't ask me how Daredevil's the last guy that's standing, but okay. It came out, like I said, in 1995 to very little fanfare. It wasn't, you know, setting the sales charts on fire. It got some critical acclaim. But in the time since, Garth Ennis has become Garth Ennis, The Boys, you know, big time writer. And so people have gone back and it's been reprinted twice, once in 2000, once in 2008. But this book can still be had for a fairly affordable sum. The 90-day average on a CGC 9.8 is just $117. And it's really, you got buy one of the reprints or read it digitally. It is a crazy story.
Okay, yeah, I definitely have to read this. You know, recently they had a ghostwriter destroys the Marvel Universe. I wonder if it's a play on this particular title. Oh,
for sure. It was, you know, very much in that same vein. Garth Ennis, if you ever read his Punisher run in the early 2000s with Steve Dillon, it's very much that, you know, dark, dark black humor. I mean, it starts off in Central Park with, you know, that battle I told you about. And the first people he goes after are the X-Men. He kills Kitty Pryde. I mean, poor Kitty.
Oh, it's awesome.
You don't see Kitty.
Very nihilistic. Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, so if you can't find a copy, because it was, you know, in the very depths of the marketplace at that point where Marvel was being distributed through Heroes World, all the shops were really hurting. The orders weren't extremely strong because Punisher was not, like I said, on his last legs. Garth Ennis was not Garth Ennis yet. So it's a tougher book to find in high grade. But the story, mwah, chef's kiss, that story. Check it out. And we're going to move on from our 25-year rule to our underrated books of the week with more Punisher action, Richard.
Yeah, this is an interesting story. I picked this week, What If Peter Parker Became the Punisher? This is a one-off book from 2018, and the cover is amazing. It is the spider suit, but instead of red and blue, it's all black with white webbing over it. It is a cool, cool look. And instead of having web shooters, he's got these multi-barreled weapons that are strapped to his wrist. And he's in that famous Punisher scene where the bullets are striking the wall as he's backed up against it. And he's shooting back with his web spinners or his weapon. It is an amazing looking cover. As a matter of fact, the reason why I first got interested, it was solely for that gorgeous cover. Like I said, it's a one shot, so this is a single story, and the premise of the story is Peter goes the story of him being bitten by a spider. He passes up on the stopping the thief, and that thief at later on kills Uncle Ben, and instead of going to console Aunt May, which is what he did in Amazing Spider-Man, he goes after the person who killed his uncle.
Does he trade the microscope that Uncle Ben and Aunt May got him for his birthday for an M60?
he might have, if this story was expanded upon, because he goes full on assassin. He kills this guy and then turns to vigilantism to fight all of the regular spider villains, Sandman, Electro,
Dr. Octopus.
Yeah, Dr. Octopus. Craven. Sorry. Craven. Yes, he goes after all of those. His arch nemesis, of course, is the Green Goblin. And I'm not going to spoil the story for people because it is a great story. But let's just say instead of Gwen Stacy dying, Gwen Stacy survives. And at the end, there's a little bit of a twist. And again, read the story. I'm not going to spoil it. But it's a really, really cool story. But this book is not that expensive. The a 9.8, the 90 days is $72. But the last high sale was $103. So this book is kind of trending up a little bit. I would love to see, you know, Marvel is starting a What If series on Disney Plus, and I would love to see a story like this show up on that series. The more I thought about it, though, with the entanglement with Sony for any spider character, it's probably not going to happen, but the thought of it happening is exciting. This is one of my picks, not necessarily for investment purposes, but just because it's a good story. It is a good story, and it's a fun read, and it's a one-shot, so there's no commitment after this particular book. But pick it up. I picked up a copy for $25 off of eBay. So they're out there, inexpensive, raw, and it's something that I think you'll enjoy having in your collection.
I will definitely check that out because I love that other Punisher one-shot what-if type thing. So I will check this out as well. So since we're really on the topic of killing people with guns, my underrated books of the week are
Bad Segue.
I know, thank you. We're on the topic of extreme violence, fellow man. Or my underrated book of the week is Battle issues number 64 through 70. Huh? Battle was an Atlas comic, Marvel's predecessor, that ran all the way through the 50s into the very early 60s. And around issue 64 in 1959, Jack Kirby came back to Marvel. The Atlas implosion happened where they laid everyone off and they just used inventory stories for about a year. They burned through all those inventory stories, so they needed new stuff. So they brought back good old Stan, brought back his stable of people. Jack Kirby, who was looking for work because he had just left DC. Steve Ditko, Joe Sinnott. All these people are part of Battle, and they're really cool books because if you look, they're just got these beautiful Jack Kirby covers. They look like early Marvels. Here's why I like them, is the big Jack Kirby fan that I am. It's obvious that Kirby is also writing his own stories based on his war experiences, because Kirby was in World War II. He got trench foot. I mean, just horrible stuff. Go Google it. He really saved his country. But you see things like find them, chase them, blast them. That's Kirby copy. That's not Stan Lee copy. That's Kirby writing that, if you ever have a familiarity with New Gods and things like that.
So what year is that?
This is from 1959. So he started in issue 64. This is issue 65. And it's like the last six issues of the run are where you get the original Silver Age Marvel team together. A year before Fantastic Four number one, they're all working on these books. You've got Steve Ditko inking Kirby on a few stories. You've got Bill Everett art. You've got just the architects of the Marvel Universe just practicing their craft on the last year of this book. They're very, very tough in grade. I've got a few high grade copies. Like I've got a 7.0 with this great Kirby black cover that's very tough.
I could see that being difficult.
Yeah. I've got an 8.0 with another Kirby cover. You know, some of the depictions of the Koreans are problematic in 2020.
Right.
I'm going to put that out there. But it's a really tough run to track down. I'm still looking for a number 64. I've never seen an issue 64 in the wild ever.
Wow.
And you guys know I'm 185 years old. But I've got the rest of the run in varying conditions. Issue 70, the last issue, is also very tough. It's got this beautiful, super cool cover where you've got these guys hiding a big weapon behind this dude. I don't know if you can see it, but it's a tough book. And I just love them. They're great. If you are looking for an early taste of the Marvel Universe, you've got Rawhide Kid is also a Lee and Kirby thing with an origin very much like Peter Parker's. You know, his Uncle Ben is killed by a burglar, and he goes and gets revenge. So Battle is one to check out, and wait until I buy out. Like I say every time, wait until I buy all mine. Thank you.
So if you see a number 64, just send it to John, care of the show.
Yeah, just send it to me or shoot me a DM and tell me how many hundreds of dollars you want to rip me off for. Hey, on that happy note, we are going to finish off the show for this week. We will see you next time. Remember, we've got our live episode coming up. We'll let you know when. We'll figure it out.
I can't wait. This should be fun.
Spooky. We will see you.
Oh, John.